T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Fourth and final hour, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Time to talk a little football. Patriots travel to Chicago to take on the Bears this week. Joining us, as he does every Wednesday at this time, is Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Tom, brought to you by Dr. Robert Leonard and Dr. Matthew Lopresti, the hair doctors of Tom E. Curran at 1-800-GET-HAIR. Hey, Tom, how are you?
What's going on, Dale? Hello, Richard.
Hello.
Surprised. I'm not surprised. You're probably not surprised. But even Bill Belichick was not willing to put Khalil Mack in the Lawrence Taylor category today, despite apparently somebody in the media asking him if he would. I don't think I'm ready to go that far yet either, huh?
He put Willie McGinnis in the Lawrence Taylor category in like 2000 or 2001 before Willie turned really into Willie. So there are occasions where Bill will dabble in putting people in the Lawrence Taylor category. He actually put Jamie Collins there a few years
That's
ago
right.
when discussing his athletic ability. So I think Bill is, you know, I don't think Khalil Mack is Lawrence Taylor either, but Bill's playing fast and loose with his LT comparisons.
Now, he's also day-to-day, it seems like Khalil Mack is. And when he's healthy, he's one of the best defensive players in the league. But who knows what his status is going to be on Sunday. The offense, Tom, has been putting up a ton of points the last 3 weeks against Miami, Indy, and Kansas City. Is it fair to say that Chicago has a better defense than all of them?
It's fair to say, but I think right now, certainly they have a better defense than
Chiefs
than Kansas City.
Yeah.
But and the way the Indianapolis Colts were diminished is a massive factor as well. So, yeah, but I think that you're going to go on the road, Khalil Mack or no Khalil Mack, it's going to be a different challenge. So I think it's fair to expect that, 38, 38 and 43 that we've seen the last few weeks might not be realistic. But on the other hand, too, when you watch these games, have you yet seen Tom Brady dialed in?
I said that earlier today, Tom. Yeah. I think he's still a really good quarterback. Don't misunderstand my point. But I've seen him miss some throws that I'm not used to seeing him miss.
There was a throw to Edelman in the flat down near the end zone the other day, and it was just so rushed with, there's some guys who can do it. Mahomes and Rodgers can throw from a completely open stance. But Brady is so anal about his fundamentals. I was surprised to see him not use his legs at all and get himself square and throw it to Edelman in the way he did, and it was a complete misfire. So I still think I'm not saying that he's in decline. I do think that this is a portion where the time that he didn't spend with the team might be visiting upon him a little bit, and at the end of the year you'll see him return to who he's always been. But the upshot is I still don't think he's dialed in, and I think that he would admit that.
We saw a big jump in snaps for Josh Gordon from week to week. It was 18 against Miami, 18 against Indy, and then it ended up being 81% of the snaps against Kansas City. Now, everybody was excited about the touchdown from 2 weeks, but really this past week, he was targeted a team-high 9 times. Not a ton of highlights necessarily, but clearly they feel like he knows where to go and what he's doing now.
Yeah, and every time they go to him, he catches the ball completely with his hands. I have yet to see him cradle one into his body. It's just, he's a snatch catcher.
Yes.
And when he does, he's got it tucked away and his body is ready to move into starting to accept contact or try to break away. There's going to be a time where he is going to take one of those slants and take it a long way. And I think the one interesting thing about Gordon, and when the Patriots went through that period of time where they got Corey Coleman after the Bills released him and they brought him in. And then there was the Josh Gordon availability and, the courtship of him. I wasn't convinced that Gordon would be able to, I didn't want too many projects. I was like, pick a project and work on that. Why don't you pick on the project who actually shows up to work, even if he doesn't go to the right places. So I said, Corey Coleman, but again, Gordon has come in, been a good student of the game by all appearances, been a good citizen by all appearances, and he's getting more and more put on his plate. And as a result, this has mitigated what I thought was an offseason mistake in letting go of Brandon Cooks. they dumped into Josh Gordon, and good for them. Right. Maybe they knew, hey, somewhere down the line we'll find somebody, because we always do. But they really dumped into Josh Gordon, and it's working out great for them so far.
Is it safe to say that the Patriots will likely not play an offense even approaching what Kansas City has the rest of the year?
Yeah, 100%. Don't you think? I mean, they're nasty. It was funny to hear Stephon Gilmore say the other day, I've never seen anybody as fast as Tyreek Hill. Never. That's the fastest person I've ever seen.
The fastest person alive. Like,
it was unbelievable. And, you know, if you look at McCourty on the kickoff return where he tracked down the returner at the 3-yard line, he was running like the Terminator cop in Terminator 2.
Yeah, he was fast.
It was bizarre. And he had no shot in keeping up with Tyreek Hill once Tyreek Hill got a step on him. None. So that's an unusual offense with two players in particular with unusual skills in Hill and Mahomes. So there's not going to be a lot of teams like that.
On like the sliding scale of defenses, like elite, great, good, average, below average, what do you need now to win the Super Bowl?
Oh, boy. You mean generally or the Patriots in particular?
Let's keep it to the Patriots. So knowing that you have a really good offense, what would it be?
I think you need to be able to make plays when you're in 5 and 6 and 7 defensive backs. You know, don't get beaten deep. They played so well in the first half in terms of, you know, keeping the Chiefs in check in the red zone. And there were plays that Kansas City missed, but that's part of the equation as well. The Patriots also, you know, made plays at the linebacker level. I think really that, to me, it's not so much the deep part of the field, it's the middle of the field. Can you defend the middle of the field from 4 yards to 15 yards capably? And that's where teams are going to try and stress every defense, the Patriots in particular, because, you know, they really only have one guy who can double as a really good tight end cover guy. Well, they could use McCourty. See, I think they put Devin McCourty on Tyreek Hill because they believed he could run with him. They thought he was one of the few guys who could do that. But if you put Chung on a tight end and Devin on most any fast guy, you're going to be pretty much okay. But they got exploited there. But I think you see that all the time with the Patriots. When they have speed threatening them at the second level, that's when they have a big problem. And every team should. Conversely, though, the emergence of Sony Michel and James Devlin and the interior blocking has made the Patriots so potent as a play action team. I'm fascinated to see what they're going to be able to do to teams going forward.
It was kind of interesting to me. Belichick talking about Michel today said that he didn't think that the lack of training camp time was what slowed Michel down. He said he's playing against better competition now. And you find many of these younger players start to play better as the competition gets better.
Yeah. And guys showing up in places that you don't expect them to. Or, you know, you say, I'm going to bounce this, and you try to bounce it, and then that defensive end you thought you could bounce it on is, wow, he's even faster than the guys in the SEC.
Right.
So, you know, he'll be able to make different decisions, but I think you see him in the open field when he gets it in there and decides, I'm going, he's a legitimate breakaway threat. And the Patriots have not had breakaway threats necessarily. There were times when LeGarrette Blount would get loose. But Deion Lewis wasn't a breakaway threat because he had tiny little legs. You know, he's not going to score a 60-yard touchdown. Sony Michel could do that for you.
Now, I guess the one thing, like maybe the one kind of knock on Sony Michel is the few times they have tried throwing it to him, it hasn't really looked pretty. And some of that's on Brady. Like, it's not all on Sony Michel. And I know he didn't catch a lot of passes at Georgia, but at the same time, the expectation was in this offense, he was. Does it really matter? Because James White, you know, can catch a zillion passes. When Sony Michel's out there, you probably know it's more likely going to be a run. Like, does that matter? Is that something that they're still going to try to want to figure out?
Well, I think that's where the play action is awesome, too. You're not going to get him featured in the passing game, but you're going to have him on the field in what looks like a power formation with Devlin on the field, and you can go play action and still throw it. But he's good, and he's been very good in blitz pickup. But, yeah, I think Brady has a tendency, too, when a guy goes out in a pattern, he's going to throw it where he's supposed to be. Even if the guy isn't there, almost to prove a point.
Yeah.
And then he's going to say, that's not where you're supposed to be. That's why I threw it at the side of your head. And I think that's happened with Michel because he feels as if, okay, well, if I adjust to where he is, then that's allowing him to go to the wrong spot. I don't know. Maybe that's too much trying to get in his head, but I think Michel has yet to pick up the nuances. But he didn't have an apprentice year like Shane Vereen did, and James White had probably
a couple,
two seasons worth of apprenticing. And he wasn't even a very good pass catcher. You know, you remember the 2015 AFC Championship game, just, you know, wasn't really very effective. And they went to him over and over and over again.
We talked to Willie McGinnis about this yesterday. I am an unabashed Dante Scarnecchia fan. I think he does a remarkable job with this offensive line every single year. And I think this offensive line has, again, even when Marcus Cannon went out the other day and Adrian Waddle had to come in, again, they do a really good job, first of all, of protecting Brady. The sack that he took and the fumble was his fault, not their fault. And as you say, their run blocking's been really good.
And it's just a sea change from what we saw against Detroit. So whatever Scarnecchia said, did, or instructed during that week, I mean, that was an embarrassing performance. And the criticism of Michel that flowed from that was completely ignorant of what was going on in front of him. So now we've seen that the offensive line has opened holes, and Belichick spoke about it yesterday on his conference call. Nothing has helped the passing game more than the emergence of the running game and vice versa. But Scarnecchia, I think, has, again, pulled all the right levers. But I think McDaniels has done a great job, too. And Brady is just a great equalizer in being able to get rid of it. Okay, you know what? We might have a mismatch over here. Gronk stand up just to give a different look. All those things, I think, enter into it because it's – I mean, he has, Brady, been sacked twice in the last three games. One was on that bizarre Chris Jones play where he just kind of teleported into the backfield, and then the other one that was completely on Brady.
What do you think, or how do you think Gronk has looked through six games? He is back after last game on pace, I believe, for the yards incentive, although it's close. The receptions incentive, I think, is right on, projecting forward, way off the pace on touchdowns, as he only has one so far this year. But how do you think he's looked?
Good. Not great. And I think that the ankle did bother him for a period of time, but you can't look at what he did on that last drive and say anything, but he's looked good. Now, I do think it's interesting. I'm still trying to figure out, and Gronk would not say what happened, but I thought that that exchange between he and Brady, and Phil Perry and I talked about this, had less to do with Brady proclaiming how long the two of them were going to play and more to do with Rob Gronkowski going up to Brady and saying, thank you for going to me late in the game. Thank you for trusting in me. And Brady then grabbing his head and saying, what are you talking about? Forever, I'll always go to you, 100%.
Right.
Because you hear Gronk at the end say, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So I'm not positive what the exchange was. It could have been forever, but I really think that the forever referenced Brady's belief in Gronkowski, who had a very limited role in that game. Not only that, but I talked to Gronk in the locker room afterwards, and he was strangely down. I actually asked him. He goes, no, I'm good. Didn't talk to the media after the game, but Brady spent time both on Instagram and in his post game, and the next day with your station talking about how great Gronk is and how many great plays he's made. So I think Gronk has just a little bit of insecurity right now that he's dealing with in terms of what's his role.
The other part of this is the Patriots prepare to go to Chicago this week is what they've done in the AFC East. I know that, you know, a couple of teams won last week, but what they've done is continued what they do every single year is put themselves in a position to basically wrap this thing up by the 1st of December.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think of it, but the projections as well had to make sense that, okay, if you put Josh Allen, Nathan Peterman, and Sam Darnold under center, how will the AFC East, how will half of the AFC East quarterback contingent look? Probably not that great. So, yeah, you're exactly right. Entering a little dry spot in the Patriots schedule, though, the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. Just circling back to Gronk real quick, he only has one red zone target so far on the season. What do you attribute that to? Because Chris Hogan has two, Patterson has three, Devlin even has one. Is it just because of the coverage that they're seeing, or what do you think goes into that? Such a good question. I think we may have lost him. He mentioned a...
I think he hates you.
There could be that.
There's a tinge of that.
He said a dry spot for the Patriots schedule. I thought maybe he meant for his service on his phone, because all of a sudden we just can't hear him at all.
That service. So
it's a really important red zone question.
Well, and we were talking about the AFC East, and we find out today that Derek Anderson is going to start at quarterback
for the Buffalo Bills
weekend.
Yeah.
And just to put it in perspective.
Yeah. How long has he been on the team?
Well, probably not long. I
think it's
8 days.
8 days.
And to put it in perspective for you, Natalie Wiener, who covers Seahawks games, pointed this out on Twitter today. Colin Kaepernick has started and won an NFL game more recently than Derek Anderson.
Oh, my God. Although Derek Anderson was the guy who won 10 games with the Browns. Or a few years ago, and the Browns
had to have been the greatest quarterback ever.
He was obviously very good, but yeah, that's the state of affairs for the Bills. Is Tom back? All right, let's try Tom again.
I think it was just that you hate him.
It might be a bad question, Tom, but if you could entertain it anyway.
All right, let's get Tom again. this guy and his technology out here,
unbelievable.
I think a lot of it's attributable to the fact that for the first four games, he was getting tripled in the red zone.
Yeah.
They were just attacking him. So there were so many people on him that they didn't have an opportunity. And I don't think that the double teaming has really subsided, as Peter King pointed out in his column on Monday. You know, you still have the same thing where he's getting a lot of attention down in the red zone. And it's tough for him. He's got to know that this money, look, money is, you know, sailing out the window like one of those new window commercials if you don't replace them.
That's right. And really, on both seasons. I mean, you're letting out hot air or cold air.
Right.
You know?
It's going out the window. You've seen those cartoons.
I've seen them.
You want to throw your money out the window?
No, I don't.
And that's what Gronk has experienced.
Got it.
Let's get to the important stuff. A texter specifically wanted me to ask you this and get to the stuff that really matters.
Here we go.
How's Bo?
Bo's good. He's sitting shotgun right now. I was driving. And I had him with me. That's why we went to a dead spot here in Lakeville, which has a few dead spots in town. Went through a dead spot, but Bo is now panting in the riding shotgun because we parked and we're in the sun.
Did you ever think that Bo was maybe going to be a bigger star than you?
I knew he had the capability.
Yeah.
Much more camera presence.
Yes.
Very savvy. Very mm-hmm. savvy. And, you know, he went to the Stanislavski School of Method Acting as well, so he understands. You know, you can say so much with his two soulful beagle eyes.
He's very comfortable in front of the camera, I've noticed. And he
also know it's there.
He lets the moment come to him, which you don't see all the time. It's very, very impressive, Tom.
This thing, I picked him up a few minutes ago to get him out of visiting my ma.
Yeah.
I picked him up, and she kept talking, as she is
sure.
wont to do.
Sure.
And I had to stand there for about 3 minutes with the dog in my arms like an 18-month-old. And he didn't move once. He just like a baby.
Because he knew you were rescuing him.
He's
so.
Like, am I on video right now? Are you taping this? He's just always ready to go. He's always ready to shoot this guy.
This can't look bad. I look bad. It's like, yeah, cameras are always on.
All right, I'll ask you as we leave you, Patriots in Chicago on Sunday. Who do you like?
Oh, I like the Patriots. I think the Trubisky is going to be a nice come down from Andrew Luck and Patrick Mahomes to deal with him. You know, they have some fast guys too, but the Patriots also get a leg up because they're dealing with an offense that they just prepared for, as Bill Belichick explained. Matt Nagy, having been offensive coordinator with Kansas City, he's brought that system out to Chicago, so the Patriots understand a little bit of what kind of schemes they're going to deal with, and with lesser players running them this week.
We appreciate the time, as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye.
Thanks,
you
Tom.
And Bo.
Yes, thanks to both of you
made an
guys.
Appearance on the program. We
always,
didn't know.
Always great. He's not super vocal.
Or enthusiastic.
At times.
No, he's pretty unenthusiastic.
He had a nice Monday morning react video where his tail was flapping the entire time.
He did have a tail wag,
yeah.
Which was the first time I've seen it.
Any kind of emotion. For a while, I thought it was like a Weekend at Bernie's situation with poor Bo. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of movement going on, but just enough. You know, it's just enough.
If you follow Tommy Curran on Twitter, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, Bo.
His dog, Bo, appears
I mean, he
quite
tweets,
frequently.
Tweets about the Patriots every once in a while, too, but the Bo stuff is really what you want. So he mentions Mitchell Trubisky, who, Dale, last year was pretty underwhelming when he got a chance with the Bears. He has 9 touchdown passes in the last 2 games. He also, for the season, is averaging over 70% on completions. So I don't think he's great, and I'm with Tom. He's no Pat Mahomes, but the last couple of weeks, he has put up some pretty impressive numbers.
Couple of important things to get to here, just as we get to the break.
I feel like
even more important.
Okay, I was going to say everything we talk about is important.
From practice, we know that Marcus Cannon was not there. Suffered another head injury, quote unquote, means a concussion.
Yes. Yeah,
but supposedly, according to Jeff Howe, they feel that there's the possibility he can clear concussion protocol and be ready to go this weekend.
All right.
Walkthrough practice, basically. Belichick lightening the load on the players down there.
Again.
And as always, Mike Reese tries to keep us up to date on what the set list is.
Any Migos?
No. Jay-Z.
Oh, there we go.
Jay-Z, 99 Problems.
But,
Sicko Mode, Travis Scott.
Travis Scott, of course, is Kylie Jenner's baby daddy.
Well, there you
go. I like that little pop culture for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, just we try to keep you up to date on all the stuff that matters.
Good.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number.
Oh, wait a minute, Dale.
Uh-oh,
could
no.
it be? Could it be?
It's your birthday today.
Robert. No.
Robert?
It is Robert Williams' 21st birthday.
I was thinking of Kraft. But happy birthday to the rookie Robert Williams. How'd it go? Pretty good.
Keep everybody up to date. You know?
He's 21?
I got to be honest.
He can have his first beer tonight.
Robert's kind of an easy one. When you pulled out Patrice that time, you blew me away.
That was impressive.
I mean, when it was Patrice Bergeron's birthday and you pulled that one out, one just shocked
me. That was pretty special.
I had to go in the back and do extra recording that day.
This Patrice!
Patrice! So happy birthday to Robert Williams.
Yeah. Congratulations.
We haven't had a chance to trot one of those out lately, but I'm glad we got a chance.
Of course, a healthy scratch last night was not even active.
Yeah, I wonder why. He probably didn't know there was a game.
He may not have.
WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Bill, you've seen a lot of good pass rushers in your career, starting with Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White. Does Mac sort of rank up there with one of the better ones you've seen?
I'm talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah, I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. You put everybody down below that. That's with a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, I'm sort of with him on that one. Not sure I'm ready to put Khalil Mack in that category yet.
Not every player is coked out of their minds while they're out on the field, so it's hard to compare him to Lawrence Taylor.
So earlier in the program, we were talking about the gigantic cheating scandal bringing baseball to its knees.
Dale is all over Rob Manfred. He can't stand the commissioner.
You know coward.
He called him a gutless coward.
Get it right. I said a gutless coward.
Keith
Law. And it's not that. Yes, it is this. The entire gutless coward part is they've been burying this thing apparently for a while now.
Right.
We found out that the Dodgers made accusations last year in the World Series. We found out that the Oakland A's made accusations in August. The Cleveland Indians made accusations in the last series. And if Danny Picard doesn't run this story yesterday.
Oh, we don't know about it.
Nobody would know.
We're not talking
and
about
Rob
it.
And Rob Manfred would be saying, okay, we got by another one here.
Right, if all these teams know about it, they must have relayed this on to Major League Baseball. So how do they not put a stop to it? How do they not end it? Like, I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it's the worst thing ever. Like, we've heard of worse cheating scandals. I don't think it's egregious. But if all these teams are on to you, how can you allow it to go on? And Major League Baseball, by doing nothing about it, or at least it seems like they've done nothing about it, once the story does get out there.
If they've done anything, Houston said,
they weren't
you,
listening to
we're going
to
do what we want.
It was similar. It was Patriots and Spygate all over again. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks for the memo. We're going to continue to do it because we want to do it. But pretty ballsy to do it at Fenway Park and to have some idiot taking pictures inside the dugout and then texting and then pictures and texting. And then the excuse is comical. Oh, we were just making sure that they weren't doing it.
That they weren't cheating.
Like, come on.
If you get a chance and you can go online, read Jeff Passan's piece on Yahoo. Now, Danny Picard is the Pulitzer Prize winner who broke this story.
Yes, he is.
Jeff Passan took it a couple of steps further.
He has some more info.
And he's got pictures of this guy off this guy's Instagram account, which I don't know what happened, magically disappeared last night.
Do you think they talk about it on the game tonight?
Yes, they have to.
They have to mention it. They have to talk about it. We'll see how far that goes, because I'm sure Major League Baseball
Well, I'm sure both managers are going to be asked about it today.
Yeah, they are. Well, they were even asked about it a little bit last night, and they kind of just, you know, Cora, I don't think we know exactly how he really feels, but he's just sort of, he had the line, you know, hey, if we think they're stealing signs, we change them. Like that kind of thing.
Which they're doing a lot of, by the way.
They're doing a ton.
There was another piece written by, I think, Jason Stark, where he says,
yeah, it was.
Look at the pace of play in the playoffs and see what they're doing to the game here. How many times are you seeing pitchers step off? Are you seeing batters step out? What happened to the 30-second pitch clock, by the way?
I don't know anything about that. And he basically, yeah, the title of Jason Stark's story is Welcome to Baseball's Age of Ultra Paranoia. And you're right. You're seeing these pitchers take forever. The signs, it seems like, and I'm a simpleton, but it seems like they're more and more elaborate. Like you got guys doing the hand signals up top, then the normal finger signals, and they're going nuts.
And catchers are going to get killed because all these passed balls that you're seeing,
passed balls are
they're getting crossed up on a regular basis. And as you pointed out, if Nathan Eovaldi's got a 101-mile-an-hour heater coming on the outside corner,
and you think
you're sitting slider,
you're got curve ready
to get killed.
Just a nice smooth curveball. They're like, ah, balls at the backstop. So they've had issues with it. The guys stepping off the mound or the batters saying they're taking too much time. Because think about all the signs they're going through. So the batter's ready to go. And he's like, what is this? Because if you shake off a sign, now you got to go through all that nonsense
again.
So it's like it takes forever. Even if they like the pitch that is called, then outside of that, you're taking even longer. So,
and as the fine TBS broadcast crew pointed out
last
night.
They're really growing on me.
As they pointed out last night. They're going through multiple signals, even when there's nobody on base.
Nobody's on base. Normally, that's so easy. They have the camera. You see it, like, oh, here you go, fastball. And now I'm like, I don't know what's coming. Like, they don't know what's coming. And so they're spending a lot of time. The Astros are. And so are all teams, by the way. Some are probably doing it, you know, a little bit more legally than others. But all teams are trying to steal signs or to pick up something.
And have always tried to steal signs.
They have. But where it gets shady is if you're at your home park, and you have certain things rigged up in the outfield and all that nonsense. It's one thing if you have a guy who's really good at picking it up, whether it's Alex Cora, whether it's Ron Renicky or whatever, and they're really good at it, great, use it to your advantage. But if you have some loser taking pictures of your dugout and then texting you during the game, you're not supposed to be getting text during the game. You're not supposed to be Apple watching it like the Red Sox were a year ago. And I also wonder, how do they get all that information? Like, what do? They have a guy in the tunnel that just, like, runs up and says what's going on?
Well,
because we don't know what's back there.
Yeah, according to the piece that Jeff Passan wrote,
yeah.
The A's thought that they were clapping to signal pitches, that they would clap from the dugout.
No, my point is...
wasn't the Dodgers. It was somebody else who said they were banging on a trash can.
No, I understand how they relay that. I'm saying once the guy who takes the pictures... Who is he texting, and then who relays that text to the manager or the players? Because, like, we've never seen a manager, like, pull his cell phone out and look at his phone. But it's got to be somebody down the runway that said, oh, by the way, you know, this is the indicator or this is whatever, you know, curveball. And then from there, that's easy. You can clap. You can yell a player's last name. That means it's curveball. Your first name, it means it's a fastball. Whatever. You can, that stuff I get. But how they communicate... Well, it's just like, I guess, Alex Cora, when he got thrown out of the game, he's still making the decisions, even though he's not sitting in the dugout. So
no, that's similar, not true. No, once he's kicked out, of course he's not. That would be wrong.
And he's like, oh, there's a little bit of that. I have no say anymore. Now, I wanted Brandon Workman up the whole time.
Obviously, I didn't hear it, but we got a text from a couple of people who said evidently Rob Bradford was getting clobbered on Houston Sports Talk Radio at about 11 o'clock last night.
Bradfoe was?
Because Bradfoe's the one who reported that, you know, a Major League Baseball source told him this is a really big deal.
Yeah, and so Houston
and he reported it.
Yeah, sure he did.
And then the Houston Sports Talk Radio people
they
were killing Rob Bradford.
Wait till they get a hold of some of his podcast audio. They'll really give him the business. They're like, we can't understand anything. They're like, this guy is saying it's a big deal?
Yesterday, I got an email from MLB after all the Steve Pierce comments. We wrote some articles on WEEI.com, and a guy reached out and said, hey, can you send me some of that audio? You have it. I said, yep. So I send it to him. He goes, I listened to it. It's playable at best.
Playable at best. Well, a caller told us earlier in the week we were very listenable. Not very. Take the very out. He said, our show is listenable.
Yeah, we weren't very listenable.
So you thought that audio was playable?
He did. The guy from MLB.
Okay.
He asked you for a favor. You sent him the audio. He responds back that it's playable. Like, yeah, no kidding.
I think
that's obnoxious.
I think the Rob Bradford audio is out there. I think people know what they're getting.
No, but that really bothers me from that guy.
Well, he wasn't saying
it
in a rude way.
Can you make that better? No, this is what I have. You asked for it. I'm doing a favor for you. And then, nah, the favor's not good enough? What a loser that guy is. Was that Rob Bradford?
Would you call him a turd?
Yeah, probably.
We need a name.
Yeah, who was it?
Keith's going after him.
Let's air him out.
I am not giving you his name.
Was it Rob Manfred?
It was Rob Manfred. Yes, Dale. For your sake.
He was looking out for the website, yeah.
That's obnoxious, though. Hey, do me a favor. Oh, yeah, here's your favor. It wasn't great. You don't need to tell me that.
Yeah, just don't use it. Don't say anything.
Yeah, don't use it. Move on.
I mean,
that's what we have.
By
that's
calling
what we
and telling
you.
You that.
Yeah.
I mean, what do they think? You're suddenly, I vow to be better from now on.
Like, oh, I should have sent you the better version of it.
I should have sent you the stuff that Rob didn't record.
Come on. The Bradford audio. Now in Houston, they're giving them the business, apparently. So, huh.
Well, somebody, and I didn't hear it, obviously, but a texter said they were killing
angry.
Rob Bradford.
Bradfo show. Unreal. Boom sauce.
They might have been killing him for that.
Yeah.
They might have heard the boom sauce
they
thing.
They may have heard that.
Saw a couple of the t-shirts.
They should send
Houston
a few of those shirts. Send them some shirts. Make up. Everybody can make up. It'll be fine.
617-779-7937.
Bradford stinks. That was Sam Bradford, not Rob.
Oh, I don't know. Ted's in Portland. Hey, Ted.
Hey, guys. Here's the one question about this whole cheating thing I can't figure out. If this was going on since last year, why would Houston continue to do it knowing that Cora is in the dugout?
Same reason why Belichick did it to Eric Mangini.
Yeah, when Eric Mangini was on the other sideline.
He's just like, we're going to do it. This is what we do. We're doing it.
Just pure arrogance?
That's what it feels like to me, because I'm with you. Why would you? Cora knows all the tricks of the trade. Why would you do it to him? But Belichick did the exact same thing, and maybe you just feel like, hey, we're above it.
Wow.
And that's my guess. That's all I can think of.
I would like to know who busted Kyle MacLachlan from the beside the Red Sox dugout. Who's the one who said, there he is, go get him and get him out of there? Was it actually Alex Cora? I doubt that. Was it Dave Dombrowski? Was it who was the one who said, that's him, go get him?
Well, if he's being so obvious about it, it could have been anybody. Like, if he's just standing up, taking pictures, and then on his phone, then taking pictures, and it's nonstop in the dugout, anybody could be like, that guy's suspect. But if he was doing it a little bit more on the sly, but Cora recognized him, like, and I don't know if he does. I don't know if Cora knows who this guy is or not. But if he did, then maybe he turned him in. I don't know. But again, if you're just standing there and constantly taking pictures inside the dugout, like, how many of those do you need? Like, clearly, if you're doing that all game long, I would think anybody could pick that guy out.
Mark's in Plainville. Hey, Mark.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
Great. How
doing
are you?
Doing pretty good.
I'm driving, so I'm hands-free here. Hopefully you can hear me.
Oh, yeah. It's better safe than sorry.
I was listening to your show, and
thanks.
It just occurred to me, why can't the... as they do in football, why can't the catcher have an earpiece inside his helmet and whoever's in the dugout signaling the calls signals it to him? The pitcher also has an earpiece, so he knows the same thing, and then nobody can steal signals.
What happens when the pitcher shakes off the call?
Well, I guess the dugout would call in another.
Come up with another play. So you don't think they could hack into that or read lips of the guy that's calling in the plays?
No, you see everybody.
Oh, yeah, you hold up the menu.
Gloves
yeah.
over their mouth like this.
No, that's true.
I see Xander Bogaerts with his hand over his mouth. I'm thinking, what are you going to say that I'm going to care about?
You don't
about?
Think a team would hack into that? And also, what do you do? So the catcher, I can kind of see it, but now you're just sticking an earpiece into the... It's not like they have a helmet on, like a quarterback
right,
or a linebacker.
Right. Little IFB. He's got his IFB pack in his back pocket.
But then you can't really hear everything the same. I think we're overthinking it. I think it's so are the teams right now. They're overthinking it. Like, calm down. Like, Cora's right. If I think they're stealing signs, we'll change the signs. You don't need to go nuts about it.
That seems pretty clear. And by the way, that's what they're doing. That's, as pointed out by Stark, that's why the game has slowed to a crawl.
No, I know.
Because they're running through 18 different signals.
But that's why if Manfred, and every time I've ever heard Manfred talk, he's only talking about two things. pace of play and getting young kids into baseball. That's all he ever talks about. So if he's really worried about pace of play, he needs to address this because this is slowing the game down. So maybe it's this offseason. He talks to every team and says, listen, if we find out that you're stealing signs in a way that we do not feel like is on the up and up.
Like having a runner at second base. Well, that then that's your fault if you screw it
up. Right, he's taking a peek, whatever. Or if the catcher's, you know, putting the signals down too low and somebody else can see him, fine, whatever. But if you're doing all that other nonsense and all these teams are paranoid, you are going to get four-hour games.
Mike's in Springfield. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Great, Mike. We're good.
Hey, I got a nickname for the Celtics.
All right, let's hear it.
Hashtag gangrene.
Is the hashtag essential to it?
You got it trending.
I think it kind of works with it.
Gangrene? Yeah, it's going to be a no for me, dog.
I don't see it. No for me, dog.
That's right.
Wow.
Randy Jackson.
Thank you, Randy. I don't see this ripping the T-shirts off the shelves.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously well thought out, Mike, and we appreciate it, but it's I'm going with the Uncle Drew crew. Uncle Drew crew is the way to go.
Did you order that T-shirt that Morris had on yesterday?
The Nightmare on Causeway Street? I got to order that. That thing looks sweet. All the guys on there with different horror masks. Looks like
Bane's as Bane is the best one of them all.
It's not.
I liked it a lot.
It's not.
I don't care.
Bane's not a horror villain.
That's okay.
He's a Batman villain.
He's still a villain.
All right.
You're taking this way too seriously.
They need to be horror villains.
Hashtag Dork Podcast.
Thank you.
We've got what else you got coming up next. Sports Radio, WEEI.
Back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
All right, a couple of things that we didn't get to throughout the course of the program. So, Keith?
Yes?
What else you got?
How about this? Last night, I know a lot of you probably didn't watch it because you were burnt out, and I was too. You had a four-hour baseball game. You had a basketball game to watch. But the NLCS.
We had the 1,000th edition of SmackDown.
Great point, Dale. The NLCS Game 4, Dodgers and Brewers. They ended up going 13 innings. Dodgers won after like 5.5 hours. But in the 10th inning.
I thought it was still going on.
It might still be. Manny Machado hit a grounder to the left side.
Oh,
and got,
what a sleaze.
What is this
fuck,
guy?
Huh?
And so you already know, like, he's kind of a shady guy. He may have tried to hurt Pedroia, even though Pedroia ended up being on his side.
Hey, that was him, not
me. Don't worry about that. But so he goes running down the line, and Aguilar is the first baseman for Milwaukee. He is perfectly on his side of the base.
Yes.
They throw it over there, and as Machado's running by, he kicks him in, like, the Achilles heel. Bench is clear, as
flat
they should.
Out kicked him.
That is awful. Now, I've always been one of
by
these guys.
By the way,
guys,
why don't they just chuck him?
For that, they should. For that, they really should. That is dirty. That's as dirty of a play as you're going to see. I've always said if it's a bad throw and the first baseman has to come across to the right side of the bag, I'm okay with contact there because what else do you want the guy to do?
Right.
Runners going down the train tracks and you got to get off of them. But he was clearly on his half of the bag and it was not like there's no turn. It wasn't a hit to the outfield. He was running straight and kicks the guy in the ankle, in the Achilles. That was awful. Manny Machado is the worst.
What else you got?
Damn. I feel a little nostalgic, a little wistful today.
Is that right?
Yeah, you know, a little reminiscent of past Dale and Michael and Keith programs.
Yes,
and,
what a show.
You know, when we used to try to go to this as our go-to audio guy. So once again,
yes.
The godfather of sports talk show hosts.
Let's hear him.
Mike Francesa at our sister station with some more astute NFL analysis.
Question you were bringing up yesterday and maybe today about Eli Manning, and part of the problem is it's not really him as much as the line that he's gotten sacked so many times.
He's been sacked 20 times, yeah.
Right, but you know, you mentioned the guys who are sacked more than him, but he's been sacked 20 times, and at 19 times he's been sacked Prescott, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. So everyone gets sacked that many times.
That's not true. Everybody gets sacked that many times. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is having a bad year going into last night. He's having a bad year. The guy that had eight touchdowns and seven interceptions going into last night's game. Those are Aaron Rodgers' numbers?
Except no. He has 10 touchdowns and one interception.
Now 12 and one.
It's very close. It's very close to 8-7.
It's not. No. He has the one interception all year. And after
he's having a bad year.
12 touchdowns, one pick. He's having a pretty good year. Quarterback rating over 100.
Yeah. Going into last night. He's having a bad year. What, the, guy, no, the guy that had eight touchdowns and seven interceptions.
Who was he actually talking about, you think?
Derek Anderson.
Yeah. Peterman?
I don't know.
Who was he referring to?
I bet if we bought the app, he'd tell us the real stuff.
That's actually a good point.
On the app, we'd know.
Eight touchdowns, seven interceptions. Nobody has those numbers.
As opposed to 12 and 1.
Nobody has those.
Blake Bortles.
Bortles is 9 and 8. That's a really close
one.
That's
who he was thinking
of. He was thinking
of
Blake Bortles.
Close enough.
No, it wasn't.
All right, maybe not.
Who wins tonight? Game
Red Sox. I love Porcello.
Porcello? Rossi?
I'm going to go Red Sox.
Let's make it a clean sweep.
Positive Dale, positive Keith,
yeah.
And me.
Final score, Houston 9, Red Sox 1.
I can't believe it.
We'll be back with a wrap-up in just a moment.
Matt?
Goodbye. Thank you for stopping by. Goodbye. Thank you for stopping by.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.